I want to be president, though I'm only 9 years old. I want to be president, sick of doing what I'm told. I went to the White House to see the president. I said, man, you got a nice house. Is this place for rent? He said, you can have it. I've had my fill. You know, it's hard to be president, paying all these bills. Everybody wants something. They want it right away. Everybody wants the benefits, but nobody wants to pay. I said, Mr. President, you know you worry too much. Why don't you take a vacation? We'll stay in touch. I called all the children from around the land. They were all happy to lend a helping hand. They broke open their piggy banks. They sent me nickels and dimes. We balanced the budget in record time. We cleaned up the country and we sheltered the poor. Now if you wanna see me, look up at Mount Rushmore.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay, well, y'all know, Nick Forrester said it, make a plan and make sure to vote. This is Carol here with Arts Live and Local, or as we call it these days, Arts Live from the Parking Lot. And I am delighted to be here with you with some very exciting guests. Want to send a shout out to Squamish, to Sydney and Robin and Omaka, and to Seashell, Tessa and Sev, to Wyoming and New York, and Nova Scotia, Nouvelle-Écosse, wherever you are, Long Beach, and to all of you who have generously donated to support this fabulous radio station. Thank you so, so much. If you missed it, coastradio.org will get you there. And hit that red button and go for it. Thank you so much. Well, my first guest, oh boy, did she do a number on me. You actually met her a few weeks ago. She was here. Deborah Reed is her name. And she and Apricot Irving were doing a conversation. So they were both on the air. But I kept Deborah in the dark a bit so that she could come back today and tell us about her brand new book, Pale Morning Light with Violet Swan, a novel of a life in art. And why do I say she did a number on me? Because I have had these people, characters, humans, in my brain, in my heart, taking over my life for the last week as I read the book. Kept me up till 6 in the morning one night. Morning. So, Deborah, welcome.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Phew. So, Deborah is the author of a number of novels that we can mention later. And I understand you've also written a couple of thrillers with a pen name. Is that a true story?
That is a true story. Early on, when I was just starting out writing, I did write a couple of thrillers, and I used a pen name because it's not generally what I do or what I had planned to do. So I sort of had two writing careers running at once at the start there, and then once my literary novels took off, then that's really what I've been doing ever since.
So you were writing the serious, or whatever you'd like to call them, books at the same time as the thrillers?
Yes.
Okay.
Just that the thrillers were easier to sell.
Yeah.
You know, 20 years or 15 years ago, whenever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So they were sold first, and then the rest followed after that.
Well, you've done quite a bit for the rest. I know you, The Days When Birds Come Back, that was just, what, last year? Or when was that?
The hardcover came out in 2018, and then the paperback came out in 2019.
Okay. So you are quite prolific. You also have Olive. Is that
mm-hmm.
how you say it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Things We Set on Fire.
Mm-hmm.
That seems rather relevant, considering the book I've just read. And Carry Yourself Back to Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't read the others, though. I was about to read The Days When Birds Came Back, but I got, for better or worse, I got detoured. So this is my first book of yours. And I'm wondering, before we go into it, and I'm going to let you do most of the talking about it, because every time I read, and I had to keep putting it down until that one fateful night when I couldn't, I just, every word opened up something new or related back to something. You drop words and you pick them up later, and I don't want to give away what shouldn't be given away, and I'm not sure what you feel that is. So I'm going to let you tell us about the book. But I'll give an overview, because this is actually out in the public. 93-year-old mm-hmm. Violet Swan, and the name alone, Violet Swan, became famous for her abstract paintings, which evoke tranquility, innocence, and joy. The business of Violet is run by her only child, Francisco, and his wife, Penny. But as Violet's last days seem to be approaching, an earthquake near their home on the Oregon coast. Yes, folks, this takes place in what could be North Tillamook County, which I believe is where you live. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I wonder how people felt about that. You brought a real earthquake to North. Thank you. Sets a series of events in motion, and her deeply hidden past begins to resurface. So, lots of secrets, lots of silences, and again, lots of hints. And after a while, pretty soon after I started reading, I realized, okay, just relax and let Deborah tell the story. Because I kept trying to figure, wait. The first time I heard the name Ada, I thought, wait, who's Ada? And I, you know, it was like a Russian novel. I started to go back to find, and I said, no, she'll tell us. I can imagine. So
that's right.
Where is this coming from, 93-year-old Violet Swan? I do understand that you had somewhat of a model. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I did. I wanted to write a character when I set out. I wanted her to be an older woman who was an artist, and I settled on a fine artist, a painter. And I wanted her to be a celebrated artist, which is unusual for women, particularly of mm-hmm. This age.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted her to have a husband who was the caretaker, so really flip the roles between them, that she gets to be the artist and he becomes the caretaker.
Okay, wait.
And then what could go wrong.
Thank you. Okay. But where did your motivation come from in the beginning?
Well, so it was two things. It was my desire to write a character who was a celebrated artist. And also, shortly before I began to write this novel, I found out that my great-grandfather was a whiskey runner during Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a still in the basement that he ran with his oldest son. And the still exploded, and the result of that explosion was that a young granddaughter was killed in that explosion. And so my great-grandfather and his oldest son ended up going to prison for that. My grandmother, who would have been the same age as Violet, was a young child in the home at that time. And she was sent away to be raised, after this happened, she was sent away to be raised by an older sister who was already married. And so I only just found this out, and
that's a
you know,
powerful
my own
story.
Father didn't know this about his mother.
How did you find it out?
I found out about it through a distant relative who told me the story, which at first I didn't believe, and then I looked it up, and I was actually able to find the newspaper articles online about the court, about the trial.
Wow.
So I confirmed it. There they were, and there's a picture of my great-grandfather who looks just like my father.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And so
I'm seeing parallels.
There is a
parallels.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a still that blows up in the story, and Violet, unlike my grandmother, Violet is actually burned in the course of that explosion from her right shoulder down to her foot, and she loses her sister in that, her younger sister who she adores, and her father. So that is a tragedy that changes the entire course of her life. From that moment on, she follows a different trajectory than she would have.
I did know that there was some reality in your family. I didn't realize it was that close. So that is a very unusual story, and I can imagine where you would be able to capture that and place it. There's also, tell us who this Agnes Martin is.
Yeah. So Agnes Martin is the real life inspiration for the artwork that I wrote about, that I gave to Violet Swan. Agnes Martin died, I think, in 2004, and she was an abstract geometric artist who lived in the, she spent the last part of her life in Taos, New Mexico. And she was very, very secretive, just like Violet. Mm-hmm. She was, she lived alone, though. She didn't have children. And she had suffered as well from mental illness in her younger years. And I found, first, I had known about Agnes Martin's work because it evokes, like Violet's does, these feelings of joy and harmony in the viewer. Abstract art is so often known or thought of as being something that is more cerebral, where people look at it and they have to figure out what it means. Mm-hmm. But Agnes Martin's work was about emotion, and that really speaks to me, and I wanted my character to be able to have that sort of gift to offer the world, in even, regardless of the tragedy and trauma that she's endured throughout her life, that what she has decided to give back to the world instead of bitterness and anger is this beauty.
Mm-hmm. And you have, I understand you're not a visual artist, but you certainly know your colors and have a way of, I mean, I felt in literally reading the book, I felt intoxicated with the smells, the fragrances, and the colors, and they were all mixed together because you call the colors by fragrant names, and your fragrances have colors involved, and it was so luscious. And,
I'm so glad to hear that. I do have a great appreciation for art and all types of art. And I taught creative writing for a number of years, and one of the things that I really enjoy teaching students is that that the power of sensory details, of how when you render something on the page that evokes a sensory perception, it pulls the reader in closer to the story. They feel more attached to it. And actually, studies have come out to show brain imaging on people who are reading fiction, when they read metaphor and they read sensory details, the parts of the brain that would light up if the person was actually in the act of, like, smelling of a flower or biting a lemon or something, light up as if, you know, just by the reading of it. And so that's one of the first things I like to teach, because it's such an interesting aspect of our humanity and literature.
Well, I'll give a testimonial. I had no idea. I did know that you were, I didn't know what it meant, but I knew that you were the co-director of the Black Forest Writing Seminars at the University of Freiburg in Germany.
So up until I purchased the bookstore, Cloud and Leaf Bookstore here in Manzanita, where I live, I was the co-director of this creative writing program. It takes place, or took place in English, is every summer a two-week conference where people would come from all over the world, and it was taught in English, and I would teach novel writing, and I was the person who brought in other writers and decided on the faculty and all that. And it was really a labor of love. It was something I enjoyed immensely because it took me over to Germany every year. And then once the conference ended, I would get to do some traveling and stay on for a longer period. But then I bought the bookstore, you know, a year and a half ago. And as it turns out, no one's traveling now anyway.
That's a good time.
It all worked out.
So let's mention that again. You did say it's the Cloud and Leaf Bookstore in Manzanita, an independent bookstore, of course. How did that happen? Since you were enjoying doing what you were doing, you did not know that there would be restrictions. What prompted you to buy a bookstore, which is a business? It's a wonderful business, but it's still a business. And did you have background in that?
Well, no, I've never, never owned a business or run a business or anything. But well, basically, what happened is Jody Swanson, the previous owner, wanted to sell it, and the bookstore is such a loved institution in this community, and people actually come to Manzanita, and part of their plan when they're here is to visit the bookstore. It becomes part of their expectations for their visit. And there's a very strong literary community here, very strong local support of the bookstore. And I was one of those people. And so when Jody mentioned that she was going to sell it, I just kind of panicked. Like, I was afraid that someone would buy it and ruin it or turn it into something else other than the thing that we all love.
Thank you. I bet the whole community thanks you. You know, I did not know that either, but that has been happening. That's what happened with the Oddfellows Building in Astoria. It's the Astoria Arts and Movement Center, and the community was going to lose it to God knows what. So the women involved bought the building. So
I love it.
It's very exciting. I wanted to ask, first of all, that the fact that the time in the book is so fluid, I enjoy that. I've enjoyed it in, for example, Marge Piercy's books. But yours is not chapter by chapter necessarily. Sometimes it is, but it's also constantly fluid. And it occurred to me that we are right now in very fluid times. It's hard to remember what day, what time. And so I read on page 52, as a matter of fact, I jotted it down. The thing about time was that no matter how Violet had changed on the outside or the inside, she had remained every age she ever was. Wow.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel that as a person in my late 50s, and I see that in other people. And the longer we live, you know, you so often hear people say, well, how can I be 70 or 80 or 50, you know, when I still feel like I'm 30, like on the inside, you know? I think we never just become the age we are in that moment. I think we pull along all of the pieces of a lifetime with us, and they make up who we are as a whole.
And then you have reminders coming back to her and to all of us again. what with Violet and Richard, and now you have Daniel and, oh my, a bookstore owner who slips into the delightful yes. Quincy. I had to laugh at that, too. There are moments of delight, of a lot of moments of delight in this book. There's also some very hard times as well. Mm-hmm. And the relationships are primary. And you mentioned at the beginning that you wanted to, in addition to a successful woman artist who's, what, twice your age, but I was identifying very much with a lot of the things she was saying. And you talked about the supportive, devoted husband. And mm-hmm. I wondered where that came from. Also, at one point, when her daughter-in-law and son, Penny and Francisco, Frank, are in one of their bickerings, and there's talk about, you know, you were never there to do things. I did all of this. And I thought to myself, well, was he somewhere else earning a living? And now you look at Violet, and say, wait, who was supporting that family financially? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, what I wanted to do was show how, well, I don't know, I didn't set out to do this, but as I was in the middle of creating it, it turned into this sort of thing where Violet represented a woman who knew, she knew what she wanted from a young age, and she went and got it, no matter what. No mm-hmm. one was going to stop her from being the person that she wanted to be in her life. And that, I think, is unusual for a woman, especially when of her age, and a woman who's become a parent. Mm-hmm. And so Penny was more representative of a woman who put her own needs to the side and worries about everybody else and sort of falls into the role of being a wife and being a mother. And she's so dissatisfied all the time with everything, and she doesn't really understand why. She mm-hmm. doesn't understand what it is that she wants out of life, because she looks around and she thinks, well, everything looks right.
Yeah.
Why am I so unhappy? And I think that's such a common occurrence with women across the board. I think it's changing, but I think that's an ongoing struggle. And so I wanted to show, you know, what is taken and what is given and what is lost mm-hmm. when you make these types of life decisions.
And interesting your timing, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died just a few weeks ago, much to our deep despair. She was a perfect model, not that she was for your book, but when you say that, because she had a child, and yet she and her
Absolutely.
Incredibly supportive husband,
that's who, right,
both of them were working full time, and yet, etc. So fulfilling one's dreams.
Yeah, you see how rare that is. You know, we can use her, we can hold her up as an example, but we also are fully aware that that is so rare.
Well,
particularly for that age.
I'm very moved and proud to say that that was the case in my family. Both my parents were professionals, and in my father's parents' generation, which was very rare, yes.
You're very lucky.
I know, but you know, it's funny, because I came from a very different model until I moved here 46 years ago and realized, oh, that's why people are talking about women sacrificing and hiding behind and just staying home and being frustrated. And so this modeling was very powerful. And I look forward to the next generations in Violet's family. So we're not going to tell people anymore, except to say the big news, the great news, is that tomorrow at 4 p.m., you will be part of the Hoffman Manzanita Writers Series with your editor in conversation.
Yes.
This should be fascinating. 4 o'clock. Now, how does this work? You're here in Manzanita. Your editor is...
She's in Boston.
In Boston. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a Zoom, it's a webinar.
Right.
So if you go onto the hoffmanarts.org website, you will find under the events the link for the event. And you have to sign up ahead of time. You have to register. And there is a $10 charge. Mm-hmm. And the proceeds go to help the Hoffman Center for the Arts.
Which is
fabulous.
They've
been shut down this whole time, and this is part of what will help them to keep going and do the, you know, hold the wonderful Manzanita Writers Series and all the other terrific events that they have throughout the year under normal circumstances.
Right, and so, they're open right now, Thursdays through Sundays, 1 to 5 p.m., I'll just mention this now, only through the 25th, with a gorgeous exhibit. I only saw a little bit of it online, Word and Image.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually walk in there now. But for Deborah Reed, that will be a webinar tomorrow, 4 p.m. So get in touch with, give us that again, Hoffman Arts.
HoffmanArts.org.
Okay.
And just go to the events page,
right,
and you'll be able to sign up there. And you have to download, or you have to have Zoom on your device.
I think these days most of us do, because such a happening thing. So what's happening with the book? Your bookstore, though, Cloud and Leaf, is it open? Is it?
The bookstore has been quite busy. I had to close it from March 15th till May 15th, when everything had to close.
Right.
And during that time, I just took orders over the phone, and I did deliveries, I did curbside pickup, I did some online sales. And then from May 15th on, I've been operating pretty much the same. Everyone has to wear a mask, and I have a plexiglass screen on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
I only allow 4 people in the store at a time. But it has been steadily busy. There are so many people who love this store, and so many people coming from places where they can't, or they haven't been in a bookstore forever, or they've just been hunkered down in their homes for months and months. And so they come in and they're just so grateful to be in the store. And also with everybody staying home, they're reading a lot more.
Absolutely. And have you found having the bookstore to be a fulfilling task, something you never expected to do?
Yes, I have. That has been the best part of all of this, is that speaking with other people and getting to know other people in my community, because as a writer, I was always tucked away, and I didn't know that many people, even though I lived here now for almost 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that exchange of ideas and making connections and talking about books, recommending books, having customers come back and tell me how much they loved a book that I recommended, and how moved they were, and all of those things are just so satisfying. I absolutely love it.
That's great. And I bet that a lot of independent bookstores, those who are able to stay open or reopen, are feeling the same thing, because it's making community, and especially in these times, and it's serving a valuable purpose, especially in our small rural communities.
Absolutely.
I'm sure. Thanks from me too, but from all of us in this community. Well, congratulations on this fabulous book, Deborah Reed.
Thank you.
And that's I didn't even, until I just said it out loud, Deborah Reed, that's R-E-E-D, is doing a reading. That would be R-E-A-D. Anyway, that's funny. You were meant to be a writer, a reader, a bookstore person. Wonderful. Tomorrow, go to HoffmanArts.org. Check that out. But also, you can get the book. It is out in paperback, and I am very grateful that I was able to get in time to read and then try to catch up on sleep later. So this is Houghton Mifflin Harcourt editor Nicole Angelaro. Okay. Yes. We'll be joining Deborah tomorrow as part of the Hoffman Manzanita Writers Series. Thank you so much for being with me. Congratulations.
Thank you, Carol. My pleasure. And thank you so much.
I look forward to your next book.
Thank you.
And
thank
I want you to, now that when you get off, I want you to turn your radio on because I chose the next interim piece for you and for your book.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Marge Pierce. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
KMUN Astoria. And we're going to hear from Marge Piercy.
In the closet. I'll never get old, says the 15-year-old, knowing that when they ask her, she'll just say no. No, thank you. I'll stay 18, I'll stop at 28 or 35 or 42. Only a moron or a masochist would accept more years, like a dish of overcooked fish passed you at a dinner party. Just refuse. There is choice if you have the money. Go under the scalpel once, twice, seven times, liposuction, facelifts, eye jobs, botulus inserted under the skin, a peel or two. You don't exactly look young, but you've seized power over your body, made yourself into an artifact like a tight and pretty death mask. Every aging woman knows that inside, behind her face, her scrawny neck and puffy cheeks, the same swan girl swims over her reflection. We are all that we once were behind the mirror in that downy cave. The same gaze measures the world. If the ghost did rise from the failing body, what age would it be? Myself, I can't spare a single year. I see my younger selves on landings of that winding stair of years, gesticulating, weeping, banging my head on the stone of indifference, clawing until my hands bled on the granite flesh of cold lovers, fighting the wrong battles in the right wars, dropping words that would swarm me stinging. I wring what wisdom I own from every hour.
Yeah. That's Marge Piercy, one of my favorite authors and poets. And that was The Clock in the Closet. And this is an album called Choices. Actually, the name of the album is Louder, We Can't Hear You Yet, The Political Poems of Marge Piercy. I was lucky to buy that. It was the only copy from her when she was in Portland supporting Planned Parenthood. So I wanted to send that out to Deborah Reed, and to Violet Swan. You'll notice there was a swan in the poem, too. That was not anticipated. You are listening to KMUN Astoria. This is Arts Live and Local. Carol with you. Thrilled to be here. Nevada on the other side. And let me just take this moment to say a huge thank you to the entire staff KMUN, not only for keeping us on the air, and you wouldn't believe what can go wrong, well, perhaps you would, keeping us on the air, and also supporting the volunteers, people like myself, to get on the air and stay on the air in whatever way we can. And thus, all of us get to make community. So thanks to all of those at KMUN. My next guests are from the Fairweather House and Gallery in Seaside. And Denise, hello? Are you there?
Hello, Carol.
Hi.
I'm here.
Oh, good. Hi. Denise Fairweather is the founder and owner of Fairweather House and Gallery at 612 Broadway in Seaside in the historic Gilbert District. And she is also considered a neighborhood champion of the Gilbert District Shop Small. I'm not sure what that is, but maybe she'll tell us. She's also the director of the historic Gilbert District and the chairperson of Seaside Art Walk, as well as her own artistic career. She is a member of the American Society of Interior Designers. Did I cover pretty much?
Oh, my goodness. I'm thrilled to have that introduction. Thank you, Carol.
Well, I was very impressed. Denise and I sat together at last year, I guess it was, for the Wildlife Refuge. And with us, whom I didn't remember quite as well, was Sarah Vickerman, my other guest. Hi, Sarah.
Hello there.
Okay. Sarah has a title. I don't know what it means, but she's going to tell us. Working with the Fairweather House and Gallery as the Art Scout and Curator. So welcome to KMUN. I think this is is this your first time on KMUN?
I believe so. Thank you.
Okay. And someday you'll actually get to come to the studio, perhaps.
Maybe so. That'd be great.
Yeah. I think, Denise, you've been on before, haven't you, Denise?
Yes. Yeah. I was on interviewed once because I was a master gardener.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. I left that one out. I didn't know that. Okay. That's another part of the station. So I invited you here it was more than a month ago, because you are celebrating 16 years of Seaside Art Walk, which is amazing. Time goes so quickly. I was talking about fluid time. And the Art Walk, again, is in the historic Gilbert District of downtown Seaside between Holiday Drive and Broadway. Is that accurate?
That is correct. It's an art walk for that evening, the first Saturday of every month.
Well, what is the historic Gilbert District? Did you name it, or has it always been known as that, or what's?
No. Back in 1914, Alexander Gilbert was the mayor of Seaside. And, of course, there was a huge fire downtown Seaside, and he helped rebuild the city. He was actually the one that gave Seaside the prom.
Uh-huh.
And there is a Gilbert Inn up by the prom that is still active today, very active. And then the Gilbert District is two city blocks right off of Highway 101. Mm-hmm. And we call it the adult side of Seaside.
I hadn't heard that before. That's great. I love it. Yeah, because you don't have the what are those?
Well, the bridge, the Broadway Bridge divides the traditional resort area of Seaside to what we call the historic side, where there are beautiful boutiques and sit-down dining and most of the galleries. In fact, all the galleries today are in this district.
But on the other side, you have those places for kids to go and play games.
It's the family resort area, that's correct.
Right. So the adult side of Seaside. Okay, so let me ask Sarah to tell us, because I'm really curious, what does it mean? What do you do? What's your job related to Fairweather House and Gallery, or Fairweather Gallery? And then, Denise, I'll want you to tell us a little more about the Seaside Art Walk, who the galleries are, and what's going on these days, how it's changed. So, Sarah, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay. So I've been going to the Fairweather Gallery as a patron for many, many years because it's such a wonderful place. It has such a delightful variety of different paintings and decorator items and just anything you can imagine. And so Denise and I got to be friends. And at the time, I was living in Lake Oswego, near Portland, and we just moved down here to Gearhart from Lake Oswego, so we're here permanently now. But we've had a house here for years, and we've been coming down a lot. And so I wanted to do something to help Denise with the gallery. And I have spent, since I retired 5 years ago, I've spent a lot of time going to open studios and art exhibits and fairs and that sort of thing, and meeting the artists and you know, looking at different kinds of things, paintings and sculptures and, you know, all kinds of different art forms. And so it turns out that Denise, since she spends most of her time in the gallery every day, doesn't have time to go around and look, you know, meet new artists and look at their work and talk to them. And so I kind of fell into the role of identifying people who were doing work that looked like it might fit in the gallery, mm-hmm. That Denise might like, and introducing their work to Denise and giving her the opportunity, if she wanted to take advantage of it, to mm-hmm. invite these artists to show in the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of this was... I've curated a couple of shows. The first one was in 2017, and it was all about beavers. And the uh-huh. point of that show, it had a conservation mission with art as kind of the delivery mechanism mm-hmm. for the message. So
good.
We had, 85 or so artists
woo!
Who created different things. Everything you can imagine. It was every medium. We had glass. We had painting. We had wood. You know, we had felt. Lots of different things, all with beaver images or beaver habitat images.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fairweather Gallery was one of the places where this exhibit was shown. It was there for a month, and it had six other venues throughout Northwest Oregon.
Oh, my.
And then in 2019, we did a similar thing called Ode to the Tides, which had a theme that focused on coastal estuaries and tide pools and the images that are associated with those. And once again, Fairweather Gallery was kind of the anchor gallery for that exhibit, mm-hmm. which also traveled throughout the state through the Portland area and Central Coast and, you know, other places. So... that gave me an opportunity to meet several hundred artists
yeah.
whose work then became available to Denise if the artist and Denise were interested in working together. So that's what an art scout does.
Nice. Now tell me, both of you actually, but I'll start Sarah because you mentioned this. Did you have an environmental outlook on life or... animals, or is it
yes. Well, my first associate degree when I grew up in California was in art, actually,
mm-hmm.
But I never did anything with it. It didn't seem like it was possible to make a living with that. And so my second degree was in anthropology, but my master's degree was in biology, geography, and education,
mm-hmm.
which got me into mm-hmm. Working in conservation. And so shortly after I graduated, I went to work for Defenders of Wildlife, which
oh,
is
wow.
a national
yes.
nonprofit conservation organization, and worked for them for 37 years. So
oh.
my most of
okay.
my professional life was,
okay.
was you know, around doing policy work and advocacy for wildlife
see.
and conservation. So,
and
I think I think art and conservation are a perfect match.
Absolutely, because that's what life is, in art, and
yeah.
it's all together. You know what? Why I'm laughing, though, is when Denise mentioned that you would be joining us, I said, Sarah, can you tell me a little something about yourself? You did not mention any of this. So
no.
I got it out of you, and I'm glad. And thank you for doing that very important work. So, Denise, how did that work for you? Have you always sort of, since we live on the coast, been open to nature areas or?
Well, I'm known in the neighborhood and in the family and in my community as a pretty heavy duty recycler, and I don't waste anything. Sarah knows that I will iron tissue in the gallery instead of turning the heat on. But but I do feel that we have to make a real small footprint in this world, and we have to share it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So a couple years ago, we did an Arctic Light, which raised the, it was for the Alaska Wilderness League, and we partnered with Neil Main and Doug Gray and did an event, and that opened up the door that having a gallery can be an advocacy program.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to ask you, because I noticed you had Neil Main spoke at the gallery.
He has spoken for over 10 years, almost every month.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. So that's part of, and your gallery isn't, it's very extensive. As Sarah said, you've got just about everything in there. So tell us a little about it, and then mention for us the other galleries in Seaside.
Yes. And so with Sarah's help, we now have a good mix of artists. There's more than 200 Northwest artists only showing original work in the gallery, and we change our exhibits every month. There's a theme given to the artists once a year, and they sign up for these exhibits. You had asked me earlier, how are we doing in today's climate? And it's heartwarming to see that the artists are still producing, still creating, actually creating more, I think, and bringing in new work. And part of the art walk is to try to open the door and do an event that people are not intimidated. Maybe they're intimidated when they first see a gallery, but when they see an entire block with doors open and art and lights on after hours, it becomes a walkabout.
It's a party.
It is. Yeah. It's a party. Yeah. And years before, we would have live music. We would do wine tasting. We would have, you know, a French-trained chef doing hors d'oeuvres. But we've, you know, following COVID guidelines, we've tried to rethink it, and we're still able to do an art walk. So the art walk in Seaside was founded in 2004 by Kathy Tipton and Ray Coffey. Now, they're the founders of Sunrose Gallery.
Ceramics, isn't it?
Ceramics and mosaics.
Yes.
But again, only original work and only Northwest artists.
Right.
And so they had that vision, and then from that 2004, it's just expanded to, if someone has a gallery and wants to open up their doors, we try, and our deadlines are pretty set in stone. We are working 3 weeks ahead of the first Saturday art walk to get it into the newspaper and the media. And, of course, you notice that we are moving and following deadlines, and we haven't missed a deadline, even with this pandemic.
Fantastic. Wonderful. So has the community come out for Art Walk?
At the first time we were told we could only have six people in our gallery, and 10 people in another gallery, 4 people in another gallery, and we followed those guidelines, and little by little, as the patrons are visiting, they're getting more comfortable. And it's a two-hour event, and so each month it gets better and better.
Wonderful. So this is the first Saturday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. In the historic Gilbert District, which is between Holiday Drive and Broadway. So in addition to Sunrose, who are the other galleries?
Yes, we have a brand-new gallery in town called Tiger Lily Gallery, and that's right across the street at 609 Broadway. And then we have Pizza Feta, who came in from Cannon Beach, and they're opening up a gallery and a restaurant. And they're bringing in Donnie Masterson, who's well known for his murals. His work is at Stephanie Inn in Cannon Beach. He's the only artist in that boutique.
Nice.
And then previously we had art at the Art Loft in Beach Books. However, they've kind of gone forward with more book sales right now. And they did host our events, our after-hours events, and we did the special things with Sarah Bickerman. And so everybody's trying to do a hybrid show.
Right.
The Wet Spot on Holiday Drive has Billy Lutz, and he's a very well-known seaside artist in large canvases that speak a political statement. He's very well-respected.
So this is coming up in, this is going on now, what month are we in? October, right.
We're done with October. Oh, that was on October 3rd. The next show is November 7th.
Okay, and where do people, what website should they go to?
Well, we have a blog,
a
WordPress blog called the Historic Gilbert District.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have an individual page on Facebook called Seaside First Saturday Art Walk.
Okay, well, this is quite marvelous that you've got this solid event to depend on for others to depend on, and that the community is working together to keep it going. So that's fantastic. And that both of you are involved in this way of integrating art and the environment, the ecology, and the beauty of our world. So thank you so much. And do keep us posted. Keep me posted, and we'll get it on the air each month. And let us know what's happening.
Thank you,
thank you so much. It was an interesting interview.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you both in person someday again.
Thank you, Cal.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
KMUN, Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, coastradio.org. And I think we have some music for you.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nights in Tiananmen Square. And it's coming from the feel that it ain't exactly real, or it's real that it ain't exactly there. From the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming through a crack in the wall, on a visionary flood of alcohol, from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend understand it all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay. The brave, the bold, the battered, the heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Yeah, democracy is coming to the USA if you and all of us make sure to vote. I just want to give you a little rundown here. The value of one vote. In 1645, one vote gave Oliver Cromwell control of England. These are true facts, folks. 1845, one vote brought Texas into the Union, for better. And in 1868, one vote saved President Andrew Johnson from impeachment. 1876, one vote gave Rutherford B. Hayes the presidency of the United States. That's an important one, folks. Your vote makes a difference. Here's another one that's heartbreaking. In 1923, one vote gave Adolf Hitler leadership of the Nazi Party. 1923. In 1960, one vote change in each precinct in Illinois would have defeated John F. Kennedy. How important is one vote? don't even think about asking. Just make sure you have a plan, because your vote can make the difference. And by the way, Oregon is only one of five states, is one of only five states without campaign spending limits. We need to change that. A provision in the Oregon Constitution bans such limits. And there's lots of information on that. This year being a presidential election year, I thought you might be interested in taking a look at the presidential campaigns of 100 years ago to see what, if anything, has changed in American politics. The presidential election of 1884 was marred by negative campaigning and charges of corruption. If anything sounds familiar, don't be surprised. One of the main campaign issues was government waste and the traditional old boy network of partisan politics, patronage, and graft in Washington, resulting in higher and higher taxes on the citizens, the middle class, and poor citizens. Another theme was the need to protect American business from unfair competition from cheap imported goods. Sound familiar? And American workers from direct competition for jobs with recent immigrants willing to work for low wages. All the things that can really mess up people's brains. Protectionist politicians called for higher tariffs on imports and an end to illegal immigration. Does it sound familiar? The campaign got nasty and personal. And maybe I'll read you a little more next week. Right now, I want to let you know that the Cannon Beach Gallery has a call to artists for their miniature show. And they are open Wednesday through Sunday, 11 to 4. The deadline for the miniatures is November 1st. You can call them 503-436-0744. Or send an email, info@cannonbeacharts.org. And Celtic Colors, by the way. I've been in Nova Scotia, in Cape Breton, excuse me, for the last few nights. Check it out, CelticColors.com. Tonight's a new moon. The Hoffman, as I mentioned, has word and image. And don't forget, tomorrow at 4, but you need to register for Deborah Reed. At HoffmanArts.org. The Bay City Arts Center is featuring Discovery in Stone workshop this weekend, 9 to 4 Saturday and Sunday outside. I'm sure they'll be protected. Call Charlie 503-842-7013 or look up Bay City Arts Center 503-842-7013. It's apparently very popular. By the way, there was breaking news today, and this is my final gift to you. I got it from the Columbia River Keeper, Oregon's only coal-fired power plant. PG&E plant in Boardman, Oregon, has officially shut down. It was causing greenhouse gases, haze pollution in the Columbia River Gorge, toxic pollutants, sulfur dioxide and nitrogen, acid rain, and Columbia River Keeper sued him and won. Thank you. Thanks for being here, folks. KMUN at Storia, KTCP Tillamook, CoastRadio.org. Send me an email, carol@CoastRadio.org, if you have something you'd like to talk about. And we'll see you next week. Thanks so much to KMUN. Thanks, Nevada.